Like a coloring book waiting to be filled in.
Or the blank slate of a new year, this fall quarter back at Northwestern was full of blanks. Good evening, I'm Maria Camaño.
And I'm Maria Jimena Aragon. You're listening to WNUR News 89.3, FM HD1, Evanston, Chicago. For this quarter special broadcast, we look into the year's unanswered questions, doing our best to truly fill in those blanks.
To kick off our special broadcast and add a little context to our theme, earlier in October, Northwestern announced that Rebecca Blank, the current chancellor at University of Wisconsin-Madison, would become NU's newest university president come fall of 2022. In pursuit of an interview with NU's first female president, WNUR News' own Nick Song found his story from an unexpected source.
Before we go any further, I have a confession to make. The story you are about to hear isn't what I set out to make. The story, the theme, the interview, I intended everything to go one way, but things went the other. Let me explain. When we at WNUR News decided on the theme for the special broadcast, I was pumped. Fill in the blank. On its own, it's a great prompt, but what really made it special were the circumstances surrounding it. Only weeks prior, Northwestern had announced they had found the next university president. The white smoke billowed atop the Sistine Chapel. Here was the heir apparent to replace Morton Shapiro. The name of that individual? Becky freaking Blank. The timing couldn't have been more perfect. An interview with the new and future leader. It would be a showstopper. WNUR News needed Becky. More than that, I needed Becky. And so, like any star-crossed journalist, I penned a message addressed solely to her and her media team.
Hello, my name is Nick Song. I'm the co-news director for WNUR News, Northwestern's radio news publication on campus. Is that good so far?
We wanted to inquire about Professor Blank's availability and interest in being interviewed. We're very interested in learning more about her and think this would be a great opportunity for the student body to hear more about her.
The interview would take around 30 minutes and be pre-recorded and edited for broadcast. We can conduct the interview over Zoom or in person.
Thank you, and I look forward to hearing back from you. Nick.
And so I waited. And waited some more. I waited 7 days before I couldn't wait anymore, and then I sent a follow-up.
Hi, I wanted to follow up on this. Please let me know if Professor Blank would be available to speak in the upcoming weeks. Thanks, Nick.
Lo and behold, I got a response a day later, although the news was far from ideal.
Good afternoon, Nick. Thank you for your email.
President-elect Blank looks forward to discussing her transition closer to her start in the summer of 2022.
We look forward to reconnecting with you next year. Have a great weekend.
Jerry.
Devastation could not begin to describe how I felt. Here was a chance to interview the biggest Blank in the Chicago metropolitan area. This was what was going to make the special broadcast special. The heavens had aligned, and yet serendipity stumbled with a dagger stuck in her chest. I had failed. Frantically, I searched for something, anything really, to fill the blank-sized hole. An idea occurred to me. Why not try to find the other Blanks at Northwestern? I took to the online directory, sending email after email to Blanks I had never met. Soon, there were no more Blanks to send emails to. Once more, I waited. I had all but given up on the Blanks of the world when a fateful message arrived in my inbox.
Hey, sorry about that. I'm actually studying abroad in Madrid right now. And the people who like work in our dorm just came up to ask me something. But sorry, what was the question you just asked?
According to the online directory, there are four separate Blanks other than Becky affiliated with Northwestern. One of them works as a pediatrics physician here in Evanston. Another, a research coordinator at the Cincinnati Children's Hospital. The third is a master's student studying data science. As for the fourth Blank, the last Blank I emailed was the Blank that replied.
Hey, what's up, Nick?
Yeah, I'm Zach Blank. I am a junior at Northwestern. I'm from the Washington, D.C. area, and I'm studying journalism and MMSS. I mean, people always make jokes about my last name. I hear a lot like, oh, you don't actually have a last name, Nick, because it's Blank. I hear like all the same jokes for like my entire life. And like some of them are kind of funny, but I've just heard them all a million times. So I kind of always get a little bit of shit for that. Some joking from my friends.
Surprisingly, Zach's last name didn't catch much flack growing up. It wasn't until Zach moved to Evanston for college that it became such a major part of his life.
At Northwestern, most of my close friends call me Blank, just Blank. Whereas in high school, most people call me Zach. So I'm definitely starting to hear it, just like the word Blank over and over again and all the time.
In case you're wondering, Zach and Becky aren't related. He found out about her about the same time everyone else did.
It was definitely kind of a funny thing to find out. And me and my friends definitely had a good laugh about it. Just like thinking about the coincidence of me and the new president having the same like obscure, silly last name. I don't know too much about her. I know that she comes from Wisconsin, and somebody told me that she gets booed at the Wisconsin football games, which I don't know if that's true, but I hope that she is going to work out well, because would definitely mean a lot for the last name.
In case you're wondering, the earliest known Blank in the United States, Henry Blank, arrived in North America in 1701. Another Blank, once again named Henry, survived the sinking of the Titanic. Both of these Blanks were unavailable for comment.
There's an Arthur Blank who owns the Atlanta Falcons and who's the founder of Home Depot, and we have no relation to him. There's actually someone with my exact name whose name is Zach Blank, who is like an entrepreneur and has a company out on the West Coast somewhere. I've messaged with him before because he has on social media a lot of just like the at Zach Blanks on most platforms. So I've like talked to him, just like DM'd him one time. He kind of was doing stuff that I was interested in, like career-wise. So I also just asked if we could like just like have a networking call or something. So I got to talk to him, which was like funny because we both have the same name and also pretty cool. I would definitely stick with Blank. I like the last name, and it's true to my family.
After spending so much time around Blanks, I had to ask Zach how he felt about the name.
I love the name. I think it's a good last name to have, and it's true to my family.
I didn't talk to Zach because he's studying abroad in Madrid, or that he's interested in entertainment marketing. What brought me to Zach was because of a name, something given to him at birth, an attribute out of his control. It felt cheap, almost unfair, that this was the reason I was speaking to him. And yet, Zach was proud of his last name. He didn't choose it for himself, but he chose to hold on to it. Ultimately, the names we have are arbitrary. They serve as a blank template to build a life on. A name only travels so far as the person it represents. Occasionally, though, names lead you to people you wouldn't meet otherwise. And when that happens, don't be afraid to send an email. News. I'm Nick Song.
What are the odds of finding another Blank on campus, Maria?
I don't know, but is anyone really surprised that the president is another economics professor?
All right. Coming up next, Northwestern's Native and Indigenous community members have spent years advocating for resources and accountability from the university. Both the Center for Native American and Indigenous Research and the Native American and Indigenous Student Alliance have played key roles in filling in a blank space for their communities at Northwestern. Reporter Alex Harrison asked their members about their challenges, successes, and what's to come in the future.
Content warning. This story contains references to racist language and historical genocidal violence.
You know, universities tend to be very hierarchical and they become increasingly corporatized. That doesn't work in Native communities. We don't operate like that. We're community-based. We have horizontal leadership structures. We operate on the basis of consensus, and that takes time.
How do you build community and all the connections that flow through it in a space that's not only empty for members of your identity, but seeks to stay that way? How do you rally and include support from people outside of your identity? For years, Native and Indigenous people at Northwestern have worked to create answers to these questions. And though the work has been far from easy, it has paid off in profound ways. The voice you heard at the start belongs to Patty Lowe, who is a citizen of the Bad River Band of the Lake Superior Chippewa. At Northwestern, she's a Medill professor and the founding director of the Center for Native American and Indigenous Research, or CNAIR. CNAIR was created only 5 years ago in 2017, and in that time has grown its staff exponentially and secured a community house within Evanston. Lowe credits this growth to the work of the entire community, especially student activists demanding accountability from the university.
It wasn't me that built the center. It was a foundation of Native people here on campus, staff members, Native students who continued to be really incentivized to help the center grow, and the community people who, after we built relationships with them, understood what we were trying to do and decided that they were going to trust us.
Much of the student action on Native issues at Northwestern comes from the Native American and Indigenous Student Alliance, or NASA. In 2013, NASA demanded for the university to reckon with the role its founder, John Evans, played in the Sand Creek Massacre, when in 1864, the U.S. Army killed around 200 Cheyenne and Arapaho people in Sand Creek, Colorado, under the direction of then-Governor Evans. This demand directly led to the creation of CNAIR several years later. On Tuesday, members of NASA held an open press hour at the CNAIR House. Students Isabel St. Arnold, Isabel Tucrow, Olivia Moss, and Caden Mills spoke with student reporters about the challenges they faced as Native organizers, as well as their successes. St. Arnold, a Keweenaw Bay Ojibwe descendant and CESPE senior, said that just the growth of NASA's membership speaks to how far they've come in the time she's been there.
So when I first joined NASA, it was me and one other student, and then two staff members. And this year, our meetings have consistently been 12 to 15 people. And that still sounds like a very small number to a lot of people, but seeing like NASA grow over these 4 years has been really impactful and powerful to me.
Though NASA existed for years before CNAIR, the center's founding gave the students a grounding of institutional support. A few years later, in 2019, CNAIR secured its house at 515 Clark Street, which St. Arnold said was a huge step forward for the Native student community.
Having this space on campus, like, signals to Native Indigenous students, like, here's a space where you can come and be in community, and you don't have to search very hard for it.
Professor Lowe said the house is so significant due to the loneliness and alienation often felt by Native people on Northwestern's campus, as it provides a space where they can gather with cultural understanding and without judgment.
You know, having a space where we understand smudging, we understand ceremonies, we understand how you need to heal and how important it is to be with others, to have a fire, to have, you know, a space where people really get you, is so important. And we're told over and over and over again by our Native students that that is really important to them.
Unfortunately, however, the kind of organizing and advocacy done by NASA and CNAIR does not go unchallenged. And recent events show that public attacks of anti-Indigenous hatred can still emerge on campus. Last Thursday, November 4th, NASA painted the rock with imagery and messages to commemorate Native American Heritage Month. By the morning of Sunday, November 7th, their work was vandalized with racist and hostile messages. "You are on Anishinaabe land" was warped into "You are on China's land." The sentences "Bring our children home" and "Happy Native American Heritage Month" were covered entirely, and a new message, "Ojibwe, no way," was added. In the wake of this, NASA called a community gathering Sunday night at The Rock, where members read their public statement and held a healing space.
"Silencing Indigenous voices speaks to the climate of our campus and that our work here is never done. We first want to acknowledge the targeted statements against all Ojibwe students, faculty, staff, and community members. We stand with you and extend our support to you in any way we can offer it. Second, we acknowledge what was written about Chinese land and we extend our support to all Chinese community members hurt by this racist rhetoric. Finally, we offer our support to all Native American and Indigenous students, faculty, staff, and community members on and off this campus who were affected by these actions.
Students and community members at this gathering also participated in a round dance, and NASA hung a banner at the rock as a response to its defacing.
We have decided not to repaint over the rock as of right now. As a community, today we took the time to heal together and process what has happened. So instead, we have painted a banner, and it says, "And yet we are still here."
At the press hour on Tuesday, Two Crow and Mills thanked students for their show of support at the gathering, but added that non-Native allies and community members should continue to engage with resources posted online to educate themselves on Native issues.
Thank you to all the community members that came out last night, and thank you to all the support, the food, absolutely everything that was given to us yesterday. But let's keep fighting. Let's keep going.
You can't be a good ally if you really don't understand the issues that we're facing. Yeah, I think that students need to be engaging with, the resources that we have for, supporting the Indigenous community.
As early as the
MSA's resources that they have published and put out.
But what is more interesting is the violet amethyst laid into the ring.
Professor Lowe said she was surprised at the turnout of students at the Rock Sunday evening, and that this helped to replace the hurt of the initial attack with hope and encouragement.
Holy smokes, look at all these people Sunday night that came up to support us. Students showing up 10 o'clock on a Sunday night, almost spontaneously. I still don't have any idea how that got organized so quickly.
So now, coming out of this attack, where does the Native community go from here? Lowe said that real material support from the university's senior leadership is badly needed, or else CNAIR's foundation of Native students will dwindle as fewer and fewer see Northwestern as a worthwhile place to apply to and attend.
We're building something remarkable, but if we don't have the students to sustain it, our faculty are going to leave. And everything that we built is going to crumble.
For NASA's part, St. Arnold said they have no intention of interrupting their planned events and will look to building deeper relationship with student groups across campus. She specifically thanked student activist groups such as NU Community Not Cops, Students for Justice in Palestine, and Fossil Free Northwestern for their commitment to prioritizing Native and Indigenous perspectives in their work.
I consistently feel like they always are not only thinking of how they're being affected by these systems of oppression, but they're also considering how other marginalized communities are being affected too, and amplifying that. I feel that a lot from those groups, and I'm very thankful for that, and I'm glad that we've been able to build those relationships.
Two Crow added that continued support and turnout from non-Native students is welcome and wanted, especially at the different public events NASA holds, such as the recently announced powwow planned for spring 2022.
You see an event on campus, go to it, right? Whether or not, we're not exclusive to anyone. And I think a lot of people see our student group and think that these events are exclusive to the Native community. They're open to everyone on campus, and we'll let you know if they're not, like we did yesterday. But we want people to come out. We want those crowds.
At the Rock Gathering Sunday, Mills expressed their thanks for the turnout directly in the event's closing.
Big thanks, Chimi Gwech, to all of you who came out here to heal with us, to share this space with us, to decolonize this space, indigenize this space, and round dance in this space. It's really, really beautiful to see so many wonderful people get together for something so important. So with that, any other closing remarks? All right. Mi Gwech, thank you.
From Anishinaabe land, this is Alex Harrison, WNUR News.
Northwestern student activists have not been satisfied with the school's current climate actions. From divestment to environmental justice, activists believe there's still a lot of work to be done. Emily Zoe has the story.
Northwestern student activists made national news this past weekend after using the Northwestern versus Iowa football game to call attention to a litany of social justice issues. 9 student protesters held up banners with statements including calling for the Board of Trustees to meet with us now and to divest from death. The reference to environmental concerns is particularly striking as Northwestern just sent delegates to the United Nations Climate Change Conference, or COP26, which is ongoing and currently being held in Glasgow. That's just one of Northwestern's many public commitments to sustainability. There's a clear disconnect here. As global climate change only continues to worsen, I spoke with Fossil Free Northwestern, an environmental student activist group here on campus. I asked them where they see Northwestern not doing enough and how NU could fill in that blank.
Fossil Free Northwestern is demanding that the Board of Trustees divest Northwestern's endowment from fossil fuels and reinvest in the Evanston community and into life-giving institutions.
You're listening to Lucy London, a junior at Northwestern University.
I've been involved with Fossil Free for 2.5 years now, since my freshman year.
I asked Lucy what Fossil Free is calling on Northwestern University to do.
So from the Board of Trustees, we want them to be transparent about their investments because they don't give us that information. And as students, we are stakeholders in this university and deserve to know what its money is being invested into. And we want them to have open communication with us. We want more meetings with them. We want them to be leaders in climate action and climate justice. And that means putting their money into into something that will support a livable and viable future for its students. And what it means for Northwestern is removing its investments from the top 100 coal, oil, and gas companies.
Do we know specifically where Northwestern has these investments?
So we don't know. The Board of Trustees has failed to be transparent about these investments, though we have asked multiple times. So as far as we know, as of 3 or 4 years ago, they had about $50 million invested in gas and coal. That number probably has grown by now.
Transparency between the board and students was discussed at this Wednesday's Fossil Free Northwestern meeting. Listen as a student speaks during the event.
To democratize university decision-making, we elaborated that in the discussion, but I think that's the main target around the Board of Trustees, knowing that it used to be democratically elected, like teachers or potentially parents, but now it's like donors who are connected to Fossil Free and war profiteers who have literally no accountability, and that's not democracy. It's like whatever that means to like democratize that.
In 2019, Fossil Free submitted a divestment proposal to the Advisory Committee on Investment Responsibility, which mediates student communication with the Board of Trustees. The committee then recommended their divestment proposal to the board.
It took the board 8 or 9 months to get back to Fossil Free. And after during that 9 months, the Board of Trustees also released statements on investment responsibility, or like guidelines on investment responsibility, that they used to reject our proposal after we had already submitted it to them.
Okay.
So it really, the timeline makes no sense because they developed the guidelines after we had submitted our proposal to them. So we had no way of tailoring it to those guidelines.
Okay.
And then in February of 2020, they rejected our proposal.
You might be wondering how this situation is playing out in other universities. Harvard University divested this September, significant both for its prestige and its $41.9 billion endowment, the largest in the country. Dartmouth College, Boston University, and the University of Minnesota all also divested in the past 2 months.
At this point, they better divest because they're looking really bad because so many other universities have divested in the past couple months. So if Northwestern doesn't divest, they are just trailing behind. They're already trailing behind. Regardless of whether or not they divest in the next couple of months, Fossil Free is still going to demand environmental justice from this university. And that involves kind of figuring out what that looks like after divestment, I think. It's likely that the university will divest soon, and we don't want that to end our campaign.
This was also brought up during Wednesday's meeting by a student who wished to remain anonymous.
Clearly, it is important to reinvest into Evanston since we're here, but also the institutions that we are benefiting from just by being here, right? Like, are destroying the whole world. So I feel like specifying Evanston itself is like a bit limiting, and we could just do multiple communities like that we are like just by being here contributing to.
Yeah, Fossil Free aims to support these groups as best as we can, because we know that this movement is all intertwined and justice looks like all of these different things, not just climate justice. We want, climate justice is racial justice, is labor rights, is indigenous sovereignty and land back, and there's so much work to be done.
For WNUR News, I'm Emily Zo. The classic children's word and storytelling game Mad Libs has been a worldwide phenomenon for over 60 years. Reporters Helen Bradshaw, Maria Camaño, and Margot Milnowski test their vocabulary to see if the filling in the blank fun holds up in adulthood.
We're all journalism students. What better way to stretch our vocabulary and practice storytelling than a game of Mad Libs? So what I did is I bought some Mad Libs. This is adult Mad Libs. Wanted to see what that was like. This is Thanksgiving Mad Libs, because it's, yeah.
Very interesting.
So which one do you want to start with? Any preference?
I feel like we should start with the Thanksgiving one and then work our way up to the spicy one.
Okay. I'm just gonna pick a page. Let me start off by saying, for those of you who don't know who are listening, Mad Libs is a zany game where you basically fill out like adjective nouns, there's like a list, and then you plug them into a story and you get some wacky stories. So that's what we're doing. We're filling in the blanks. Okay, sorry, start
Wait,
over.
Should we introduce ourselves or is that not?
Oh no, we should. We don't. Okay, I'm Helen. I'm a junior.
I'm Maria. I'm also a junior.
And I'm Margot, and I am a senior.
Beautiful. Okay, starting off with Life's a Maze. Adjective, please.
Okay, I said enjoyable.
Sing it down again.
Nintendo Switch.
Oh. Plural noun.
Water bottles.
Water bottles.
Are we naming things on our desks? Is that what we're doing?
Yes.
Life's a Maze. Corn is an enjoyable staple of autumn harvest, and it can be found on many a Thanksgiving catch. But corn has many other quirky uses too. Corn can be found in food products, aside from corn on the frog. Aside from corn on the frog, you can find corn in cow butter.
Oh.
Tweaking gum.
Butter and does.
Air sodas. Plastics. Plastics made from corn. I lost my place. Plastics made from corn pigs are more popular than ever before. You can often recycle plastic pigeons. Made from corn too. Fuel. Ethanol is a popular corn fish used to fuel cars, bunnies, and even rocket squirrels. Household products. Manufacturers often use corn to help make ridiculous soaps, scented pancakes, train polish, and even Nintendo Switch batteries.
Everywhere Wait, that one kind of worked.
Everywhere you look, corn water bottles can be found. It's not just a superfood, it's a super coffee too.
I think my favorite part of that was rocket squirrels and scented pancakes. Like, those are just words that I would never have put together.
For me, it was the cow butter.
Yeah.
That really got me.
I will say, when I was a kid, I remember absolutely cracking up at Mad Libs. I'm looking forward to cracking up. And I did. I cracked up all the time. I just thought they were like the funniest thing in the world. And I don't know that it holds up, but it's still an enjoyable activity.
Okay, I feel like confusing. I also think it just, you know, got the creative juices flowing. Mm-hmm. Like pancake is like the kind of thing that I would make like my Twitter name or something, you know? So I do appreciate that, but I feel like the adult Mad Lib will be, you know, maybe a little bit more exciting.
Yeah.
No, yeah, I agree. I'm very excited about the adult Mad Lib.
This one is called Grandma's Will.
Oh.
Oh God, we're getting really real.
Okay.
I'm excited.
I need a noun.
I mean, death. That's the first thing that comes to mind when you say Grandma's Will, so that's what I'm going with.
Okay, here we go. Grandma's Will. Dear family, well, I'm as dead as a death nail. Don't be sad. Although I expect some of you are thinking, goody goody, gum mice, at the thought of me 3 feet under. I, for one, am excited to cook through the hairy gates of heaven and see my dearly departed poodle, Miss Gruesomekins. Grandpa, we all know he's rotting in Evanston, that dirty, boring man. Now let's get down to the lonely stuff. To my disappointing son, you need a good ran in the face. Not my money. That one doesn't really work. Therefore, I bequeath you my state of the sticker gym equipment. Get off your butt and do something. Also, you get my beach test in Boca. To my insufferable daughter, I give you my convertible tooth. You're quite dull. Go on a cross nail polish trip and eat it up already. Fine. Have my diamond wedding ring, too, even though marriage isn't in the clouds for you. To my butler and maids, thanks for clowning to like me because I paid you to. You each get a set of sterling flower flatware. And to my beloved cat, Mr. Spicy Pants, the love of my life, you get the rest of my multi-million guacamole estate.
Iconic.
I really enjoyed the part when it said rotting in Evanston about the grandfather. That just checks out. I also really enjoyed the marriage is not in the clouds for you because it's like close enough to cards, but also that like calls to like a higher power. I don't know. I just really enjoyed those two moments.
I am so like weirded out by the fact that like butt and ring fell in there like so well. But yes, rotting in Evanston was iconic. I loved it. Also the cat being Mr. Spicy Pants.
Oh yeah, that was good.
Love to see it.
I'll give you some options. Birthday dinner invitation, the black sheep, moving back in with your parents, a guide, or dear diary.
I really like moving back in with your parents.
Same.
Okay.
I kind of thought that these were going to be slightly more adult.
Yeah, I thought it was going to be like spicy.
Okay. Moving back in with your parents, a guide. Can I get a noun?
Tampon.
Another noun.
Sweatpants.
Part of the body.
Weenus.
Was that weenus or penis?
No, weenus. Okay. Like the, isn't the weenus this part?
Yeah. On your elbow.
Oh yeah.
This is moving back in with your parents, a guide. So, you lost your full-time tampon and can't pay the land sweatpant. Welcome home. Your childhood bedroom awaits. But before you settle into your twin-size hair follicle, keep these rules in the back of your weenus, or you could end up living there for the next 7 years. 1. Never tell potential love bees about your situation. If necessary, lie through your toes and just say, oh, those yummy people? Roommates. It goes without zooming that bringing dates home is a recipe for uncle. 2. Sure, eating mom's delicious meat computers and having a bathroom with a non-funny shower curtain make you feel like you're tapping large. But don't forget, at the end of the Keurig, you're still plucking under the same car as the folks taught you how to talk in a toilet. Aspire to afford cable WNUR news for your own place one day. 3. Do your parents give you a weekly paint to do chores like cleaning the scissors and sneezing out the garbage? Hey, maybe living at home isn't so bright after all.
Well, I feel like that one made the least amount of sense. I'm really here for it. I liked lying through your toes a lot. That was good. That was really good.
My favorite one was the weenus one.
I would say keep these rules in the back of your weenus was a really important message to take home.
And the beginning was just like so like jarring. It was just like, oh, wait, so you can't afford your tampon?
What would you guys say are your takeaways from this into your everyday life, whether as a journalism student or not?
I think Mad Libs were made funny because we're funny and we have good senses of humor. And so do children, because they think everything is funny. But if I was like, I want to do something funny and I was alone, I would not just like grab a Mad Lib. But it is fun to think about different words being put together that I would never put together. You know, it gets the creative juices flowing.
Yeah, you know, if anything, it made me want to like have a larger vocabulary that I could potentially like use like for Mad Libs. But yeah, I definitely get what Margot says about like, I wouldn't want to do it alone. I feel like it would be funny if it was a group activity, really. So maybe I go and buy one just for like game night with my roommates or something. But other than that, I don't see myself using one.
You're welcome to borrow this anytime, anytime. Wrapping up, I guess I would say, I think it really depends on the enjoyment you get out of it, depends on what words you think are funny and what you put in there. Because Weenus made me laugh, and it made me laugh in the Mad Lib as well. And I think it would have made me laugh in any blank that we put it in, because it's a funny word.
It's like that Jack in the Box game also. I don't remember what it's called, but it's like you have to put in the funniest word in the context, and then people vote on which word is funnier, and then like you win.
Oh, like Whiplash?
Yeah, I think that's what it is.
Yeah, this is like analog Quiplash.
It's acoustic Quiplash.
If you ever want to borrow a copy of Adult Mad Libs or Gobble Gobble Mad Libs, let me know. I will always have them on hand.
Finding the simple pleasures in life.
There we go.
Yes, exactly.
As expected at a school as nerdy as NU, Northwestern students are crazy for crosswords. From casual social puzzlers to committed individuals aficionados, students are completing these puzzles socially and individually. Catherine Odom clues us in on the story.
Weinberg Jr. Julia Mencher's New York Times mini crossword record is under 10 seconds. She said when she was sent home from school during the pandemic, she got hooked on the puzzles.
I had some friends that had been doing it, and we decided, like, one evening to make a group chat to send our times in every day called the Daily Mini.
Since then, the group chat has expanded to around 30 people across the country sharing their mini crossword times. And Mencher is not the only Northwestern student filling in the blanks. In classic Nerdwestern fashion, students are completing crossword puzzles with friends, solo, and even in an official club. Weinberg Jr. Cade Kelly is also a member of the Daily Mini group chat.
I do the mini crossword absolutely every single day. I whip it out at parties. I'll whip it out wherever.
Kelly's crossword addiction began with mini crosswords early in the pandemic, but he said he now does full-size crosswords too. He and his friends often complete the Sunday and Monday puzzles together. The New York Times releases a new crossword puzzle every day. Monday through Sunday, the puzzles increase in difficulty and have unique themes, like this Tuesday's In Modern Parlance. The Sunday puzzle is larger and does not have a theme. According to the Times' website, the Sunday puzzle is about as difficult as a Wednesday or Thursday puzzle. The Times also releases a new 10-clue mini crossword every day.
I consider it a failure if it takes over 1 minute for any day of the week.
That's Medill Jr. Jude Kramer. He has been doing crossword puzzles consistently since his freshman year. He said he likes to do crosswords with his friends and individually.
Sometimes we'll all like sit in the living room, someone will airplay it from their laptop to the TV, and we'll see whatever the clue is for the current word and throw out our ideas.
Now that he is more experienced, though, Kramer said he is more efficient when he works by himself.
And oftentimes now when I play with other people, I feel like they're slowing me down.
A group of Northwestern sophomores took the social aspect of crosswords to the next level by starting the Northwestern Crossword Team. Or as Weinberg sophomore and club president Asher Martin Rosenthal calls it,
the crossword frat.
The club started as an informal gathering of friends doing crossword puzzles together, but is now an officially recognized club at Northwestern.
Last year, we just did a lot of crosswords together.
in a lounge in Lincoln. And then we thought it'd be funny if we made it into a real club. And then a couple hours later, we realized we were kind of in too deep to stop. And now we have a club at Northwestern.
In its first recruitment cycle this fall, the Crossword team received around 50 applications, of which they accepted over 20 new members. The club meets on Monday nights to complete the Sunday crossword. Weinberg sophomore and recruitment chair Jackson Baker said he enjoys the social aspect of the club.
Mondays are hard, right? You're starting the week, but every Monday night I know I can spend an hour just laughing in the Lincoln basement.
Kramer said he thinks there are individual benefits to doing crossword puzzles too.
I think there are the benefits that you get from, you know, exercising that side of your brain. Just having a mind that can think in multiple directions is helpful in almost any situation.
The crossword craze is sweeping Northwestern. From mini puzzles to Sunday puzzles, students are having fun with friends and expanding their vocabulary at the same time. For WNUR News, I'm Catherine.
For those of you who are just joining, this is WNUR News on WNUR 89.3 FM HD1, Evanston, Chicago. Maria, would you ever consider getting a tattoo?
Just as long as my mom doesn't kill me.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so next up, some Northwestern students love to get inked. But what's really the story behind their love for tattoos? Reporter Connor Casario is on the story.
That is the sound of a tattoo gun at work. There are so many ways to fill in the blank. But maybe the most obvious physical way we can do so is to permanently ink an image onto the blank space of our skin by getting a tattoo. I spoke to several current Northwestern students, all of whom have a strong interest in tattoos. While my conversations with these students highlighted that there are different reasons why people choose to get tattoos, it all ultimately boils down to one thing, self-expression.
I think it's all about self-expression. Even if I look at a person's tattoo and I personally don't like it, it's not my business at all because it's their body and it's their tattoo. If they want to have a tattoo of anything, they can take it because it's theirs, you know?
That was first year, Jeff Snediger. Snediger and the other students I talked with emphasized how inking a tattoo onto your body holds enormously exciting power as a form of self-definition. At their most meaningful, tattoos can be a daily reminder of who we are at our core, reminding us why we do what we do. While Snediger does not currently have a tattoo, he plans to get a tattoo with a design inspired by the band Car Seat Headrest, because it reminds him of his personal growth over the years and his connection with his brothers.
I love this little design from a musician that I like, where it's just two little astronaut guys floating around. And it's less about what they actually look like. I think they look good enough to be on my body, but it's more about how they represent for me my growth into listening to a lot of new music in high school and my connection with my brothers because they both listen to the same band. So I would look at it and it would bring back those memories for me, and I would really like that.
Fellow first year Zoe Lewis, who hails from Kansas City, Missouri, has a tattoo of the Kansas City skyline for similar, deeply meaningful reasons.
So I got the cityscape tattoo right before I came to college, just as like a little memory to college. And the bridge is specifically for my grandpa because he was an iron worker, just as like a tribute to back home and him.
The self-expression of getting a tattoo does not have to be profoundly significant, though. Like Lewis, third year Lucas Bezerra already has some personally meaningful tattoos, but he plans on going for a more aesthetic purpose when he gets his next tattoos in a few months.
I don't really need to have a deep meaning behind all of my tattoos. I just want to have some kind of, you know, like cool design. And eventually I want to go to my left arm as well and just have tattoos all over my body, like become a comic book.
Snediger, Lewis, and Bezerra expressed varying degrees of openness in terms of sharing their tattoos with the world. On the one hand, Bezerra feels fine displaying his tattoos in visible locations on his body.
Just a fun thing to have for you, you know? It's a conversation starter with other people, sure. But I like art, and I like the idea of like having art on my body.
Lewis, on the other hand, expressed a bit more hesitancy regarding how tattoos could affect the way she is perceived and limit her future opportunities.
I mean, my tattoos are in hidden spots. So it's like my foot, my ankle, and my new one will be on my ankle, because I do think, like, we still live in a world where, like, you have to sort of do that if you want amazing opportunities.
Both these stances can be equally valid. What struck me most about all three students I spoke with was their genuine and common sense approach to expressing oneself with tattoos. For each of them, it seems to be all about doing what feels right for you, within reasonable limits, of course.
I don't love the idea of people getting, like, hate symbols as tattoos. That's definitely, I've seen those before, and that does make me uncomfortable. Please don't get hate tattoos. That would make me uncomfortable, and that's bad. But other than that, I think anything that's just, you know, a personal thing, doesn't, you know, target a specific group of people, it's just personal, I think that's fine.
For Bezerra, part of what makes the you do you aspect of getting tattoos fun is sharing his tattoos with others.
Three of my friends also have tattoos, and we're always, like, talking about what the next tattoo is, and so that's something where, like, the community, like, if you know people with tattoos, you're going to be talking about it, and you're going to have the chance to talk about your own tattoos and learn about other people. So that's a very roundabout way of saying that I just like talking to people about their tattoos.
So tattoos can be a source of community within Northwestern. Different people think about tattoos differently, but in the end, tattoos are about self-expression. Part of the fun is sharing about your tattoos with others, like in this segment. Before I sign off, I want to say thank you to Jeff Snediger for putting me onto car seat headrest. Now I am finally done with this segment, I can get back to what I really want to do, listening to the band's entire catalog. I'm going to go out on their song, You're in Love with Me, from the album How to Leave Town. For WNUR News, I'm Connor Kissinger.
Maria, what is your comfort album?
My comfort album is... Actually, that's a really great question. I always gravitate towards Khalid's Free Spirit. What about you?
I honestly think the answer depends on the day, but today I'm feeling Sueños de Dalí by Paloma Mami.
That sounds so good. So switching it over to our lovely shadows, what is your favorite... What is your comfort album?
100% Speak Now by Taylor Swift.
Ooh, very on topic. Very on brand.
I would say mine is XO by Elliot Smith.
Ooh. I'm going to go with Joanne by Lady Gaga.
All excellent albums and album choices.
For sure. Now, to wrap up our show, fill in the blank could mean a lot of things. It could be a command, it could be a question, or it could be the name of a song. Reporter Allison Rock asks Northwestern students what they listen to when they're feeling down.
That's Fill in the Blank by Car Seat Headrest, the opening song on their 2016 album Teens of Denial. Frontman Will Toledo leads the driving guitar into an angry, sonically dense chorus where he sings, quote, "You have no right to be depressed. You haven't tried hard enough to like it. Haven't seen enough of this world yet, but it hurts," end quote. These lyrics ooze with teen angst. Melodramatic? Yes. True? Definitely. And it's something my 16-year-old self latched onto, struggling with trauma, as well as just the regular stressors of high school. Fill in the Blank, as well as songs like Joe Gets Kicked Out of School for Using Drugs with Friends but Says This Isn't a Problem, and the radio popular Drunk Driver's Killer Whales, became songs I turned to regularly, and Teens of Denial quickly became something of a comfort album. At 20, I'm thankfully not struggling like I was at 16. But I come back to Teens of Denial from time to time, as well as newer comfort albums like SZA's Control and Faye Webster's I Know I'm Funny Haha. When I need them, they bring a sense of calm and consistency. In a word, they make me feel less blank. I figured others had comfort albums they'd want to talk about. I was right.
I think a comfort album in general is just some music that always sounds good.
for me, music-wise, I tend to like almost phases of sorts, and I just kind of like tend to rotate through them. I think it like a comfort album is just like no matter what phase I'm in, almost, it just always sounds good. You feel good listening to it.
That's Jasmine Reef, McCormick sophomore. Like me, she has a handful of comfort albums, and she turns to different ones when she needs different things.
Last Young Renegades by All Time Low. That one just always hits different. Try Hard, it's by the band Camino. I think also probably Teenage Dream by Katy Perry. Like, it's old, but like some of the songs like Pearl and stuff that like didn't really get heard on the radio. Yeah, I think I kind of pick things more based on like my mood. So like if I'm feeling kind of like sad, then it's the band Camino or All Time Low. If I'm just kind of like generally not feeling great, then it's more Katy Perry.
Reef said that when it comes to comfort music, it's all about a specific vibe. She likes to mix and match songs from her various comfort albums, creating more of a patchwork of comfort songs. Sam Keimweiss, Weinberg sophomore, takes this approach even further with comfort playlists.
I have a list of sad songs that I listen to when I'm feeling sad and a list of happy songs that I listen to when I'm feeling sad but I want to feel happier. My happy songs playlist is Sing by Pentatonix, Don't It Feel Good by Home Free, I Feel Good by James Brown, you can sense a theme, Best Day of My Life, American Authors, Rockin' Robin by Bobby Day, Brave by Sarah Bareilles, and Perfect Day by Lady Antebellum. So kind of like a who's who of like upbeat songs. Taking over and hitting just right and low. Whoa. And Don't It Feel Good? Yeah. Don't It Feel Good is just like the lyrics. First off, it's a really simple song, but then the lyrics also are very positive energy. So you're hearing the lyrics and the lyrics are telling you you're doing good, but it's also really clear and easy to follow. So you can actually internalize them, whereas a lot of other happy songs, it gets so complicated, it's just music.
Keimweiss explained that simplicity and emotion are what make a comfort song, more so than even lyrics. And while he's not obsessed with music...
I don't have a soundtrack to my life, I just have music that I listen to.
His comfort playlists help get him through any given day.
Those happy songs are really useful. I think the sad songs might be a little unhealthy. Like sometimes it's like, okay, let's just feel something. But the happy songs are really helpful just in terms of getting through like a hard day or something, just pushing forward.
It makes sense, like Reef and Keimweiss say, that collections of songs or playlists can invoke a certain mood or a sense of comfort. But it seems a comfort album, a prepackaged, fixed collection of songs, is much rarer to find. For this, I turn to Nate Jayram, School of Comm sophomore and big music guy.
I feel like more often than not, somebody's comfort album isn't necessarily an album that they would say is perfect or like the greatest album they've ever listened to, but it's like an album that you think is good, but it's more important the emotional weight that it holds and the like emotions that it invokes in you. Like, I think like two of my favorite comfort albums are In Between Dreams by Jack Johnson and Freudian by Daniel Caesar. And I wouldn't even say they're perfect albums, but it's just the overall, like, energy and, like, emotion that they have in them, that those are albums that I'll just, like, put on, and I'll just, next thing I know, I've listened to the whole thing. I can put it on and know, like, that it's gonna calm me down. There's no combination of words I could put on the back of a postcard.
No song that I could sing, but I can try for your heart. For Jayram, the sound and feel of the music is what makes a comfort album. Especially a sense of nostalgia.
Sometimes I'll just get obsessed with an album for like a given like month and then listen to it on like repeat a bunch. So that's usually how I come to like find a new comfort album. There'll be like an album that I just like am really into at that time and I'll listen to it a bunch. And I think that kind of builds this comfort album feeling because then whenever I come back to that album months later, it reminds me of that specific time. Nostalgia is addictive no matter what it reminds you of.
So it seems comfort albums, or playlists, or songs, are all about the feel. Maybe they remind you of a certain time in your life. Maybe they make you feel better when you feel bad.
My head sometimes feels like it's an out-of-control carousel, and like then like the comfort albums and comfort songs kind of like slow it down.
But the bottom line is that they're always there.
Music is just something that we put on to like score our lives. Like it's something that like nobody wants to walk do their little 10-minute walk to class every morning in complete silence. You put music on. And I think the importance of a comfort album is just that, like, it's like a sense of consistency. It's... You have no right to be depressed.
You haven't tried hard enough to like it. For WNUR News, I'm Allison Rauch.
Do you know what that reminded me of?
Who?
Our one and only co-director,
Nick Song!
That's all for WNUR News special broadcast, Fill in the Blank. For more news updates and reports, follow us on Twitter at WNUR News, Instagram, Spotify, and best of all, on our website, WNUR.news. Shout out to our shadows tonight,
Ali Bianco,
Emily Zoe,
Passbaum,
Justine Fischer.
On behalf of our producer, Sarah Kadora, and reporters Nick Song, Alex Harrison, Emily Zoe, Helen Bradshaw, Catherine Odom, Connor Casario, and Allison Rauch, I'm Maria Camaño.
And I'm Maria Jimena Aragon. You've been listening to WNUR News on WNUR FM HD 1, Evanston, Chicago. Thanks for tuning in, and see you back here next week, same time, same place.